Listener Production.
So, isn't it strange to think that for all the talk and all the stress around rapid tests, most of us had never used one just a month ago? Then, as you know, Omicron ruined Christmas and the PCR testing system was completely overwhelmed. And since then, rats have dominated so many political arguments, conversations, and created so much frustration for anyone really needing one. Now, somewhere amongst this annoying situation are a few entrepreneurs cashing in on this huge market that feels like it came out of nowhere. But it didn't. One Aussie supplier saw this coming as far back as 2020. So who was that? And who is cashing in on the rat boom? Find out in today's briefing. It is Thursday, January 27, and I'm joined by Jan Fran for today's headlines.
Hello, everyone. Well, it has been a big few days for Dylan Alcott. He was named Australian of the Year, and those big few days are set to get even bigger because he's going to play his 8th Australian Open title this afternoon.
Unfortunately, I heard the Australian of the Year after party is one of the best after parties ever. But unfortunately, I've got an Australian Open to try and win.
As I've always said about Dylan, many great things about him. One of them is that he loves to party, so for him to forego one means a lot. He's going to play the Dutchman Sam Schroeder in what will be his last professional match. So, I mean, the timing's beautiful that he's been awarded Australian of the Year on Tuesday night. He plays this final and then will hopefully go on to an amazing year of advocacy for disabled Australians. Over his career, though, in tennis, he's won 15 major singles titles and 8 in doubles. And in January, remember last year, he competed the Golden Slam when he won all 4 Grand Slams and the Paralympic gold medal.
Yeah, he's an absolute legend. And, you know, this is going to be his last match. But you look back at the career that he's had and, I mean, whatever happens with this match this afternoon, he's going to be ending it on a high. And then the work really starts. You know, he's got a year ahead of him of doing what he does best, frankly, which is advocating for disabled people. He's got the national platform there for him ready to go.
Yeah, amazing. And the Australian Open is really heating up. You've got Kyrgios and Kokkinakis playing their semi-final ahead of Dylan today. And this crazy five-setter last night where Daniil Medvedev brought it home miraculously and then, slightly controversially, cited an unlikely inspiration in his after-match interview.
I didn't really know what to do, so I was like, I don't know if people are going to like it, but I told myself what Novak would do.
The crowd loving that.
It's funny, my motto is what would Novak do, and then do the opposite of that, which is get vaccinated. And the big story today, thousands of people marching in Invasion Day protests across the country yesterday.
There's been over 500 deaths and not one criminal conviction. What does that tell you?
That's Paul Silver speaking at the Sydney rally. Organisers there said more than 10,000 people took to the streets. Police say 4,000. Either way, it was a really big protest. There were also protests in Brisbane and Adelaide. And in Canberra, thousands of people gathered to celebrate 50 years of the Tent Embassy.
Yeah, there were protests in Melbourne, Hobart and Darwin that were cancelled in real life, I guess, namely because of COVID. Melbourne did have an online commemoration, I guess the way that events have been going these days online on Zoom. Around 3,000 people were said to have attended that one.
Yeah, it's really interesting every year. I think, you know, a lot of us are speculating whether there's a growing momentum in this push to change the date from January 26. And there was a significant change this year that people might not have noticed. News.com, which is News Corp's biggest news site, that's Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. He's a very powerful man. They've started a campaign to change the date. They're running banner ads that say, Australia, it's time to change the date, and lots of articles backing that argument. So that's a really important shift. Last year did the same thing on net zero, which surprised a lot of people after, you know, for decades running lots of commentary sort of pushing back on action on climate change. So it's really interesting that Rupert Murdoch's news.com have changed their position or have come to this position. So yeah, if you're reading the tea leaves on this issue, this is a pretty big leaf to note.
to the UK now, where the British PM Boris Johnson has hit a very critical point in the Downing Street parties scandal. So there's this rolling crisis which centres around 17 parties that were allegedly held at the PM's residence. This is in contravention of the lockdown restrictions in place at the time. The other big thing that is likely to happen today is that the investigation by a senior civil servant named Sue Gray is due to be handed down later today. She's been given a whole heap of photos and evidence from people at Number 10. It's not looking great for Boris Johnson.
Yeah, and that's also coming with the announcement in the last 24 hours that the London Metropolitan Police are also investigating a number of the parties.
I welcome the Met's decision to conduct its own investigation because I believe this will help to give the public the clarity it needs and help to draw a line under matters.
Yeah, that was Boris Johnson there. That line may very well be his resignation. There are a number of people in his own party have said that they're going to wait for this report to decide whether or not they back Boris Johnson. So if the report is bad, it might put them in a position where support for him becomes untenable, and that could force a leadership ballot.
And HMAS Adelaide has docked at Tonga. It's set to make contactless deliveries of aid following the volcanic eruption that rocked the archipelago 12 days ago.
Over the coming days, the task group will be involved in offloading over 250 pallets of humanitarian stores. This includes from AusAid, from DFAT, from the World Health Program, UNICEF, consists of tarpaulins, shelters, dignity and wash kits.
That was Commanding Officer Stuart Waters there.
Now, the ship will stay in and around Tonga, despite 23 crew members testing positive for COVID. So it is going to be a bit of a delicate operation there, unloading the goods. Water, medicine and engineering equipment must be left on the dockside for 3 days before it can be handled by Tongans.
Yeah, because it's one of the few countries in the world that's COVID-free. So it would be a real shame if the people coming to help gave them COVID.
Yeah, and 60% of the population is vaccinated, which is, it's certainly not as high as what it is in Australia. So I think the last thing that they would want is to have COVID on top of this disaster that they're in the midst of cleaning up.
And Australian natural gas could be a winner from the Ukraine-Russia crisis. At the moment, Europe draws more than 40% of their gas imports from Russia. So that's sparking massive fears that Russia could cut off their supply if NATO doesn't give in to their demands around Ukraine.
Yeah, now the US has been holding talks with Australia and Qatar, you know, just to keep things ticking in preparation. The Australian government has said that we're ready to ship energy supplies to Europe. It's also pledged to support, quote unquote, our friends and allies. But tensions are really continuing to grow over the Ukraine. There's more talks expected between Russia, Ukraine, France and Germany that will be taking place in Paris this week.
All right, Jan, we'll catch you tomorrow. In just a moment, who's making all the money on rats? All right, so who is making the big bucks on the rat boom? The market skyrocketed from close to zero at the end of last year to a market that could be into the hundreds of thousands of tests per day. School children and teachers will start doing them twice a week in some states. Some employees are having to do one every day. They're required for travelling over many borders. And even for many social get-togethers, people are wanting their friends to come with a negative rat test. It's around 20 that have been approved by the TGA, and only one of those is made here in Australia. Most of the others are made in China, and they're being sold at a wholesale level for around $3 to $5 per test. So there's at least 100% markup for suppliers and retailers to share in. Michael Rodden has been investigating the rat market for the Australian Financial Review. Michael, thank you for joining us. So which companies are making the money?
There's about two dozen tests that have gained approval. They're not household names mostly. The one who's probably closest to it is a company called Pantonic, and we'd only know about them because the director founder of Pantonic is David Panton, who's dating the former Foreign Affairs Minister Julie Bishop. That company's led by his two daughters, I think Sally and Laura, if I'm not mistaken. I went on their website and I haven't recognised that packet. The one that I keep seeing to buy is this one called How Pharma, which is led by Greg Howe, and they've got the little torch that comes in the packet, which is a bit fun. There are a couple of the more recognisable features. The rest are a gaggle of sort of Chinese manufacturers and local small-time distributors. I think there's a Korean manufacturer, a German one. It's very sort of hodgepodge. At the beginning of the pandemic, these people saw an opportunity and made those connections themselves. Another one who imports the tests is this sort of fitness influencer from the eastern suburbs in Sydney, whose day job seems to be importing fitness fashion weights for working out. That's Austin Campbell. And at the start of last year, she registered a new company specifically to import tests. So it's a bit of quick thinking. It's a bit of entrepreneurship. And it's mostly just people who saw an opportunity and trying to take advantage of it. And that's not a bad thing, because obviously if the government's not going to supply the tests for us themselves, then we'd want people to be buying them from overseas and selling them to us if that's what we want.
Is it largely Australians who are making the money out of this, or are there a lot of foreign suppliers as well?
There's only one Australian manufacturer of the tests. It's a company called Innovation Scientific. The drawback with that one is that its accuracy isn't as good as the other tests that the TGA has approved. Most of the other manufacturers seem to be mainly from China, and they're sort of huge Chinese conglomerates that manufacture everything from peanut oil to textiles. And they're not household names by any stretch of the imagination. You can look on their website and it's very sort of rudimentary, but they'd just be big industrial powerhouses, because a lot of the infrastructure needed for these tests is sort of the same stuff that you would have with a pregnancy test. So the basic manufacturing lines are already there. They've just switched them to be able to produce a different kind of test with a different kind of sensitivity. So it's all very sort of unglamorous, it seems.
Do you think there were big missed opportunities here? As you've said, they're basically all being produced in China. Could we have ever have gotten ahead on that? I mean, the AMA have said they warned the health department at the federal level about the need for a national supply back in September. Greg Howe, the pharmacist, was trying to spruik them back in 2020. So should we have gotten ahead of this, and were there opportunities to make more of the money here in Australia?
You could always look back with hindsight and say that, like, yeah, we should have been doing this ourselves. I find it hard to believe that we have this big thing run by the government called, you know, the National Medical Warehouse, which stores all of our emergency supplies. So at the start of the pandemic in 2020, that's where we had this big stash of masks and ventilators and things like that. It seems weird that we don't have similar infrastructure to be able to pivot when there is a pandemic, to be able to mass produce rapid tests. Now, that's all well and good for me to say, because the actual PCR testing regime was holding up quite well until very recently. And I think you'd have to be sort of lying if you thought that in December last year, there'd be this very infectious strain of the virus all around the world, which would be seeing us record 50,000 cases a day, and that there'd be hundreds of thousands of people going for a PCR test. So looking back with 2020 hindsight, it is easy to say that. But until recently, the PCR testing regime was doing perfectly. Now we see lots of different reasons why people want these RAT tests. They're going to give out two tests to every school student every week in New South Wales to test them. There's people who obviously want them for sort of like grocery distribution centres for the big supermarkets. Aged care workers is another reason why people want these tests. You can argue that till the cows come home about the benefits of that. You know, obviously people like to have the result for peace of mind, but then you've got to realise that these tests are only accurate to a degree, but it's not all that comforting. If you think about the tests that the TGA approves, 80% sensitivity means that one in five tests is going to give you a false response, or it might not give you an accurate reading if you've actually got the illness one in every five times. And you think about the amount of tests that we're going to be shoveling down the nostrils of school children, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, well, a lot of these questions hinge on how long we're going to keep buying these rapid tests for. If you look at the market going forward over the next few weeks, clearly we're trying to meet this massive surge in demand and shortage in supply. So we're going to see a lot of them hit the shelves over the next few weeks. But how do you see this market going forward? Is this something that'll burn out quite quickly, or could we be using these rapid tests for years to come? I mean, could this be a really long-term market?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, the pundits are sort of split on what's going to happen with the disease. So figuring it becomes endemic and it just hangs around like the flu every winter or so, you'd think that we'd probably just have like a stash of these tests somewhere in the cupboard. The pharmacies would probably keep stocking them. Those reports that I cited earlier in the year think that COVID diagnostics is going to become a $100 billion market by 2027. And when I read that, I was very depressed because I hope to God that we're not talking about COVID in 2027, let alone 2023. I think we're just going to be overwhelmed by supply soon. And if the pundits are right and we are passing the peak of Omicron, then logically you'd think that the testing sort of mania that's going on right now is going to subside and we're just going to be neck deep in all these tests that we're never going to use. Fingers crossed, that would be a great outcome. You look at Britain, I think they've just had almost 2 billion RAT tests set to send out to people, and that's a country of 70 million inhabitants, or most of whom probably won't be testing because so many people have had it and they've just been getting on with the lives for the last year and a bit. You know, some of them have been having parties for the last 2 years. I'm an optimist with it, so I think it's all going to pass and we're just going to have all of these tests. Some manufacturers and some local suppliers are going to be very happy, and then we're going to have all this plastic that we don't know what to do with, and I think that would be a great outcome.
Not for the environment, but good for our lifestyles. That was Michael Rodden, journo at the Australian Financial Review there, and I did find it interesting there. He was saying, look, it seems so obvious now, but that's only with the benefit of hindsight. And, you know, a lot of these entrepreneurs took a risk by getting into this early, and that risk has been rewarded. I mean, particularly Greg Howe with the pharmacy company. He was imploring the government to do more about this back in 2020. So in a sense, he deserves to do well out of this. It will be just really interesting to see how the demand for rats goes, because I guess to that point about not knowing what might happen in the future and entrepreneurs taking a risk, we still don't know what will happen in the coming months around rats. Will they be here to stay for years? Will there be a new technology? Will the pandemic take a left-hand turn that we don't see coming, or could it even end much sooner than expected? They're all questions that people take big risks on. Tomorrow on The Briefing, we'll take you to Western Australia, where they're in a very interesting position at the moment. Omicron is starting to bubble away just a week after Mark McGowan backflipped on his reopening plan.
Listener.